Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987. Also, PWTorch.com, the website, since 1999. MMA Torch, the website, covering all of the happenings in the world of Ultimate Fighting, UFC, MMA, Bellator, and much more, including live coverage and all kinds of previews of UFC 199 coming up. And also, I am host of this, the PW Torch Livecast, available here at PWTorchLivecast.com. We are on the air live 6 days a week, every week, and 7 days on WWE pay-per-view weeks with post-pay-per-view shows on Sunday nights, post-Raw episodes live a half hour or about 20 minutes after Raw ends at 11:30 Eastern on Monday nights, hosted by James Caldwell with Greg Parks and Pat McNeil. I host on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We've had a great run of interviews on Thursdays the last 4 weeks. Actually, they're all great, of course, but especially the last 4 weeks, a lot of buzz for some long-form interviews. Last week, Jim Ross, and we talked in-depth about the roster split, SmackDown going live, and current happenings in WWE, the Roman Reigns challenge that WWE is facing as far as his character, and so much more. Great appearance from Jim Ross. Over 2 hours available over at pwtorchlivecast.com. Just look for the interview grid about halfway down our homepage, and you can catch up on all our interviews. The week before that, Kevin Nash is just a great appearance. First time on the show in over 4 years. We did, again, over 2 hours. That's available. Really, really, really good interview from Kevin Nash. And also in that mix was Alex Greenfield, a writer in the mid-2000s for WWE, and Kevin Eck doing his first really long-form interview since leaving WWE back in 2014. Again, over 2 hours with Kevin Eck. That, 4 weeks ago, created a huge buzz with all the insights he provided on that 2011 through 2014 span of WWE writing, storytelling, feuds, big shows. I got to go back and re-listen to that again. There was so much. The density of information in that interview was fantastic. And the only way you can hear the entire versions of all those interviews, you can hear the vast majority of them for free here at pwtorchlivecast.com. But if you want to hear the entire interviews, about 20 to 30 minutes of each of those interviews are VIP exclusive. And when you go VIP, you get ad-free access to those shows and all of our PW Torch livecasts, plus over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts, the Everyday Wade Keller Hotline, flagship shows that I host with Bruce Mitchell on weekends, Torch senior columnist over 20 years, and also Wednesdays, The Fix with Todd Martin, plus pay-per-view roundtables and a host of other, an array of other podcasts that are VIP exclusive. Get information on going VIP over at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. You'll get all kinds of details on what comes with the VIP membership, not just audio. You get access to over 25 years of PW Torch newsletters dating back to the late 1980s. Fascinating walk through history. My cover stories, match ratings on just about every pay-per-view match that's happened since the late 1980s. Hard-hitting editorials. Great Torch Talk transcripts. Before there was podcasting, there were Torch Talks with multi-part in-depth interviews with big names. Ad-free access to our website, and so much more. So check that out, pwtorch.com/govip. It is Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. This is the final episode of the PW Torch Livecast in May, and we thank everybody for your support. On Tuesdays, since WrestleMania, we've gone to a rotation of guest hosts on Tuesdays. Jason Powell was with Bruce Mitchell last week. Today, Jim Valley joins me once again. Jim, I have to ask you a question before we get rolling on Raw. When you were hosting Total Chaos Radio during the Attitude Era, were you a podcaster?
No. It was just all on radio.
It was all on because it was 2000, 2002. Right. But you were one of the greatest podcasters of all time, right? Like Frank Gotch was a great sports entertainer.
Oh yes. Yes, Frank Gotch. The great sports entertainer, Frank Gotch.
Joe Secker.
Sports entertaining is all about stretching people. Yes, exactly.
I just groaned at that. And I said this on my VIP Keller Hotline. I did, like, I don't know how long, 45-plus minutes reviewing Raw last night. And I was like, Vince McMahon, didn't he say to Steve Austin on that podcast months back with just disdain, like someone had squirted, like, sour lemon in his mouth, my dad promoted pro wrestling I promote sports entertainment. And he was so proud that he had reinvented this thing, and it's different. And he really couldn't explain to Steve Austin why it was different, other than it's a publicly traded company, and we have a marketing department that's much bigger now. Like, it, there's no difference. It's just a brand of wrestling that's evolved and changed over time. But if he invented sports entertainment, how could Gotch have been a sports entertainer? I don't get the hypocrisy there, Jim.
Well, let's just say that there's definitely a difference between sports entertainment and wrestling. I mean, particularly with Frank Gotch. I mean, Frank Gotch was a legit shooter. Frank Gotch, you know, stretched people. Frank Gotch had a legitimate background. It'd be like calling Danny Hodge a sports entertainer or something like that. I mean, if you want to make a distinction, that's fine. It reminds me of the famous story when Ted Turner bought WCW that Vince likes to tell, that Ted Turner called him up, and in Vince's best Southern drawl, he says that Ted told him that he's in the wrestling business. And of course, Vince, with his dignified Yankee answer, said, "Well, that's great, Ted. You know, I'm in the entertainment business." And I can make a distinction between those two different philosophies, but I don't think it's nitpicking at all to say that Frank Gotch was not a sports entertainer. Frank Gotch was a wrestler, period.
And I would even go so far as to say sports entertainment was a term invented by Vince McMahon to try to sell his product to advertisers and TV stations as something different than pro wrestling, which had a stigma to it. And I accept that, and I understand it was a business strategy. In 2016, WWE is the predominant brand of whatever it is that they put on television with people in wrestling trunks inside a ring, battling it out in simulated combat and yelling at each other before and after. Whatever term you want to use for that, WWE is doing the same thing that Vern Gagne did in the 60s and that it was on television in the 1950s, other than, like everything, like the NBA and the NFL, it looks different now because of production values, colorful characters, colorful uniforms, however you want to, you know, there's advertising all over the boards in the NHL. That doesn't make it anything other than hockey. So Vince McMahon has had 25, 30 years now to define what is pro wrestling in a way that has nothing to do with preconceptions from the 1970s. So I just don't I strongly argue that there is no difference between no difference that requires a separate term between what WWE does, what New Japan does today, what TNA does, what ROH does today, what Lucha Underground is about as different as it gets. You could make an argument that that there's a different term for that TV series, but I don't believe. I think it's a complete false premise that WWE has somehow flipped into some other category that needs a different term than what Jim Crockett was doing in the mid '80s.
Well, I think in Vince's mind, his performers are more well-rounded. You know, they can do, in his mind, the ideal sports entertainer or performer can, you know, is The Rock, or, you know, they can sing, they can dance, they can do light comedy, they can do serious, they can, you know, it's got a lot of different facets, and it's a performer who has got a wide range. I think that's, in Vince's mind, is what encompasses sports entertainment, at least the best that I can ascertain.
I would argue, though, that had Vince never invented the term, and had he gone out of business in 1989, that pro wrestling would look pretty much like it does, but it'd be being promoted by somebody else. I mean, I think the making money on primetime TV, yeah, requiring an expansion of hours of free TV, of free wrestling on TV, and promos would end up getting longer, and wrestlers stood in the ring and gave promos, or they stood at ringside and gave promos. But I think it's BS that Vince thinks there's some sort of difference, but it's important to him that it is. Anyway, Jim, good kind of off current events chat, although it was spurned by JBL last night. We're going to start taking calls after this first hard break of the program that we have to go to in the first 15 minutes here. When we come back, we're going to start taking calls and talk about last night's episode of Raw, get Jim's thoughts on the roster split upcoming and how WWE handled that in the opening segment. Our phone number here is 646-721-9828. That's 646-721-9828. And if you are listening to us live, thank you for joining us an hour earlier than our, quote, normal time slot since WrestleMania, which is 1 Eastern. We started at noon Eastern today. A little bit of Memorial Day travel-related time slot changes. But we appreciate everybody who did hear about that on Twitter and on pwtorch.com. And joining us live, we've got a lot of people lined up on phone calls. If you can't call us but want to email a topic that you want Jim and me to address, you want Jim and I to address, send that to pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. And it was Jim and me, if you want me to address, so Jim and me. All right, with that grammar lesson out of the way, let's go to our first break. When we come back, your phone calls and some Raw talk. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. All right, we are back here at pwtorchlivecast.com. Jim Valley joining me. Jim is a audio host of the Saturday morning wrestling version of the PW Torch Livecast. Jim, give a brief plug for what you have had on the show, who you've had on the show, and the top topics the last couple of weeks that people might want to go back and grab if they haven't listened, and what you might be talking about in upcoming weeks if you figure that out yet.
We try to stay ahead of everything. You know, by the time Saturday rolls around, you know, Raw is several days old. A lot of the news has broken. So, I mean, I think a lot of the things that need to be said and need to be analyzed have been done. So I decided Saturdays we should do just some nostalgia stuff and just kind of have some fun, whether you're just, you know, hanging around the house and resting after the work week or out at the ball field with the kids or whatever you're doing. Just to kind of keep it light and, you know, have some fun, talk about whatever you remember, whether it was, you know, the 90s, the 80s, the 2000s. You know, we had some discussion this past week with some listeners about the original brand split with the current one that's going to be upcoming. We've had a lot of great guests. We had Rhonda Shear, who I thought was hilarious. She was on the show. Remember her from USA Up All Night, you know, for like all through the 90s. She was like this overnight host of all these cheesy movies and this comedian, and she was at WrestleMania 10. And even though she doesn't know a lot about wrestling, she's so perceptive. She knew a lot about wrestling, and I thought she was great. She talked about, you know, Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon and Diesel and all that stuff in the mid 90s, which was a lot of fun. We've had Chris Romero on, Chris Youngblood, the brother of Jay Youngblood, because some listeners called and asked about Jay Youngblood, and we were able to follow up on that. And so that's one of the things that I like about the show, is that I'm able to kind of take the show in organic places and follow up with guests in that regard. We've had Memphis. We had Randy Hales on from Memphis Wrestling a couple of weeks ago, and he was live at Jerry Lawler's new bar and grill on Beale Street. So we talked about that stuff. So whatever kind of is current but ties into the nostalgia we talk about. Coming up this Saturday on the live cast, we're going to have Steve Beverly, who people have probably heard.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
On your old pro wrestling. Yeah, on your old pro wrestling focus show, Wade. Steve Beverly used to write Matt Watch, and he was very involved in the TV industry. He still is. So we can talk about you know, TV in the territorial days and how things have changed and things like that. So, yeah, Steve Beverly is going to be on this Saturday.
That is great news. Yeah, Steve, editor of Matt Watch Newsletter. You can hear him also on the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows that we put up on the PW Torch VIP podcast feed. That is a really cool part of being a VIP member, is hearing the old radio shows that you hosted, Jim, the Total Chaos show during the Attitude Era, and then the John Arezzi Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows from the late 80s through the mid-90s. We just put up an episode last week for VIP members featuring Vince Russo's first public appearance in any pro wrestling capacity. It was with John Arezzi. John Arezzi brought Vince Russo into the wrestling industry. John was looking for sponsors for his Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show in New York. Vince Russo was running some video stores and ended up partnering with John and helping him out with some things with that show. And you can hear Vinny Russo's first ever appearance that led to the industry changing. He was an absolute agitator of the status quo everywhere he went, for better and for worse. And it was a real mixed bag with him, and I give him credit where it's called for, and I've certainly been very critical of him also. But that, along with a long appearance from Dave Meltzer, taking calls and talking current events from the Wrestling Observer, cool thing there. Jim, I could go on and on about all the things you do for the Torch, the Wayback Playback. You're doing SummerSlam 98 right now with Pat. Real-time analysis and jokes and insider backstage comments that people can watch as they listen. So you can queue up SummerSlam 98 and then listen to Pat and Jim talk about it in real time as it flows for 3 hours. 1 hour a week goes up of events. And right now, I think this coming Sunday, you'll wrap that up, right, with hour number three?
That's right. We have the famous ladder match that really kind of made Triple H and The Rock. And then, of course, that huge main event of Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker. I mean, it was the biggest SummerSlam as far as buy rates go of all time. Yeah. And obviously in the network era, that will never be surpassed. So biggest SummerSlam ever. We're doing it right now in the Wayback Playback.
Very cool. All right. Let's go to our phone lines and start some conversation here about last night's Raw. Jim, you and I haven't talked about Raw yet. We talked about a few other things. So we'll intersperse our thoughts on Raw with callers because we've got a lot of people lined up and they might be on lunch break or whatever. So I want to get to them quickly here. Let's go to 912 first. 912, thanks for calling. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Michael from Georgia.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for calling. What do you got for Jim and me today?
Last night when there was the match between Rusev and Zack Ryder, Rusev did that accolade thing where he went like all the way back, and I heard that that they may be making him do that ever since he did that to Kalisto, and I thought it only worked for Kalisto just because he's so tiny and I don't want him to be doing that with everybody. And that's all I got.
All right, Michael, thanks. Yeah, when Kalisto did it, I know Travis Bryant was like, I don't want to watch that. That's breaking the guy's back in half. Jim, I think a submission hold should be applied to the point that it really hurts, and it should be sold, not where you're actually hurting anybody, but to the point where they're kind of straining for real, you know, to get out of it. I've been a huge critic of John Cena over the years, as was Steve Austin, to John Cena's face once on his own podcast early on when Steve started his podcast, that he would apply the STF so loosely and so poorly. It was inexcusable to do that. I like the idea of putting on a submission hold in a match to the point that it hurts a little, or you're at least a slightly uncomfortable. These are big boys. They can handle it, and it makes the selling more realistic. As a viewer, it makes me more engaged than if it looks like they're faking it. So I'm fine with that. Obviously, they don't actually want to hurt their wrestlers' backs. So I'm trusting Rusev and his opponents to know how flexible they are and how far back they can go.
Chip. Yeah, I wonder if it's DDP yoga or what, how they're able to do that, but... Yeah, I was kind of surprised that they were able to do that to somebody of Zack Ryder's size. But I guess that speaks to his conditioning and his flexibility. And I agree, it's a little unnerving to see. But yeah, it's effective. So yeah, I mean, as long as no one's getting hurt, yeah, I agree with you completely. But I mean, if there's someone who can't do it, then you shouldn't.
Yeah, I think if you're going to actually break somebody's back, my vote would be don't do it. I'm going to go out on that limb.
I come down against backbreaking. Yeah,
right, real backbreaking, yes. All right, let's go to 770 next. 770, state your name and which city you're calling from today.
Jim, Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, Jim, thanks for calling. What have you got for us?
Two quick things. What happened to the seventh person in the Money in the Bank? And the second quick thing was they advertised John Cena for Atlanta, Georgia event for Raw in August. That's the only person they advertised.
Yeah, I think we're going to be picking up on a lot of clues, Jim, about who's going to be on which brand come July 19th, or the week of July 19th. On my feed right now, there are tickets on sale on my Twitter feed, at The Wade Keller, by the way, and follow us on our brand, at PW Torch. So that's at The Wade Keller, at PW Torch. Jim, what's your Twitter?
I'm at Jim Valley.
Oh, you're so lucky. All right. And you're not at Jim underscore Valley or Jim Valley whatever. Yeah, that's great.
Well, yeah, I did get lucky. There are a lot of Jim Valleys out there. I got very, very lucky.
Yeah, good for you. I'm bitter. No, I'm not. I like The Wade Keller. Anyway, on my Twitter feed, they've got a graphic up. And seriously, if WWE is putting up, it has sent out to arenas graphics for November house shows that represent the actual brand split. I mean, seriously, they bring Shane McMahon in and go to all this trouble to keep it secret because they want to surprise people because it's live TV. And if they want the draft to be exciting, there's no way, and I say this only with a tinge of sarcasm, there's no way they'd be dumb enough to actually have decided who's going to be on which brand by now and be sending it out to arenas all over the country. That would ruin the draft. It would be so boneheaded. And, by the way, card subject to change. So if they're advertising John Cena now for Raw, it might mean he's going to be on Raw. It might mean that plan is for him to be on Raw, but they'll change their mind. And it could also mean they're just slapping... There's somebody in marketing who's slapping top stars on these things with the knowledge being that, well, it's all going to change, you know, by July, and we'll have to redo the art. But right now there's a graphic up for tapings in Glasgow, Scotland in November. Randy Orton, Dean Ambrose, Sasha Banks, Charlotte, Sheamus, Kevin Owens, Dolph Ziggler, Rusev, Cesaro, all on Raw. Roman Reigns, AJ Styles, Bray Wyatt. It looks like John Morrison, but it's not. I can't tell who that is. New Day and Becky Lynch are on SmackDown. Jim, is it possible that WWE's already decided the complete roster split and they're actually sending out indications, or that they're actually, when they say John Cena is going to be at Raw, that's a giveaway that John Cena is going to be on Raw, or should we not read into this yet? Because we're going to have weeks of this until the draft speculating what this all means.
Even if they have made decisions... beginning to make decisions. You know, I think that there certainly can be changes as they fine tune everything, or, you know, we've seen this before. Also, I guess it also depends on when did these things go out? Did they go out after the announcement of the brand split last week? Were they out before? Some of those lineups seem awfully loaded to me, more so than they should be. It sounds to me like they were put together beforehand and maybe things are going to be changing. I mean, it's going to take a lot of work as far as setting up. I mean, it takes a lot of work to set up arena shows and things. And I can't imagine that after just a week or so after this announcement, yeah, that they're already prepared.
And here's the thing. I know people want to know everything as soon as they can. And, you know, it's a job of what we do here to dig up information and all that. But I don't want to know who's going to be on which brand ahead of time. I just don't. I want to watch the draft, and I want to be surprised. I want to enjoy it as it plays out in whatever format it is. And I've already heard conflicting information, enough conflicting information, that I'm not 100% sure of anything. John Cena advertised for Raw later this summer. John Cena for sure going to be the SmackDown guy, and Reigns is going to be the Raw guy. I've heard enough contradictory information. It's like you said, Jim, even if they've decided, they might change their mind. In fact, they're almost for sure will change their mind. There can be injuries in the next 6-7 weeks that'll change things. There can be booking decisions where somebody turns heel who they weren't going to turn heel, and that reshuffles things. So, I mean, I just think we ought to not get too obsessed as observers of WWE and trying to figure out ahead of time who's going to be where. Because even if we figured out what the plan is as of May 31st, the likelihood of that changing 6 weeks from now is pretty great. All right, this is the PW Torch Livecast. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jim Valley this week on the Tuesday edition of the show. Jim, before we get to the next call, just your quick assessment of the AJ Styles heel turn last night, joining Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows in beating down John Cena. Do you give that a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a wait and see?
Oh, no, definitely. An absolute thumbs up. I think it's an absolute thumbs up. Particularly if, speaking of the brand split, if the rumors are true that Cena and AJ are going to SmackDown, then I think that what we can anticipate is, you know, the first meeting, probably Cena wins. The second, then sometime after that first meeting, AJ wins the SmackDown world title or whatever it's going to be called. And then Cena chases AJ all the way to WrestleMania, and we have AJ Styles and John Cena at WrestleMania. At least that's what I anticipate.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways it can go. I wouldn't be surprised if I almost think Seth Rollins and AJ Styles have to be on separate brands as top heels. But I was sort of half expecting. One of the scenarios that ran through my mind is Roman Reigns, babyface world champion on Raw. Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank, controversial finish of some kind, and that controversy leads to Stephanie or Shane, but maybe Stephanie, whoever, awarding Seth a version of the championship, because Shane and Stephanie have a dispute over the finish of the Seth versus Rollins match, and they can't decide who the champion is, and they just decide to split the belt up. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can go with that, and then, but yeah, so I'm not locked down on AJ and Cena on SmackDown, and then Seth and Reigns being on Raw, although that's certainly a possibility. I will say this about the AJ turn. Most of all, I think this almost assures he'll end up with a world title run of some kind. And two, I think it assures that he will be in the main event mix longer, because WWE needed heels. They had more baby faces with Bray Wyatt's turn, especially. They had more that's one of the reasons Seth didn't turn. If Vince is committed to Roman as a baby face, then you can't turn Seth babyface too. I mean, the heel roster depth just wasn't where it needed to be. And I said this on the Keller Hotline last night for VIP members. If the choice is Finn Balor as a heel and Styles as a face, or Finn Balor as a face on his own and AJ Styles as a heel with the club, I like this scenario better. I think Finn Balor has a bigger upside than AJ as a babyface, and I think that AJ can be as good of a heel as Finn Balor would have been. So if that is a choice that they had to make, I like the decision that they made. And I think for AJ Styles fans, this assures he'll be in the main event mix longer. Jim, are you with me on that?
Absolutely. I think there's another key word you're forgetting with Finn Balor, and that's merchandise. Balor has got a lot of upside as far as all of the merchandising that you can do with that demon character and the makeup and the action figures and, yep, you know, maybe masks or selling makeup or, you know, all of the potential there for marketing and the money and stuff. Oh yeah, no, and not that AJ Styles isn't marketable, but just the basis of all of the accoutrements of Finn Balor's character make him much more marketable, and you can monetize more things, and that's probably why Finn Balor needs to be a babyface, at least in my opinion.
As for the seventh man in Money in the Bank, I kind of assumed there would be, and now it doesn't seem like there will be, but we've got a couple weeks to go, so I'm just not sure on that.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, maybe Bray Wyatt? I don't know.
Yeah, Randy Orton? John Cena?
Yeah, Randy. Given Randy Orton's level of injuries lately in the past several years, you know, and I wouldn't put it past him, but I'm not putting Randy Orton in a Money in the Bank ladder match. But they've done stupid stuff like that before, putting injury prone people in very dangerous situations, and they've paid for it. So I wouldn't put it past him, but that's definitely not a decision I would make.
All right, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break. We'll come back and take more calls and talk more Raw and more roster split. I'm Wade Keller with Jim Valley on PW Torch Livecast here at pwtorchlivecast.com. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. All right, we are back live at PW Torch Livecast. I'm Wade Keller, editor, founder, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and PWTorch.com, and host of this, the PW Torch Livecast. If you have not yet, and you are someone who owns an iPhone or an Android device, one of the lucky few, you can download for free the PW Torch app and the MMA Torch app on your phone. Just go to the App Store and search PW Torch and MMA Torch and download our free apps. They have all the news that's available on our website, which is mobile friendly, by the way, if you prefer that route on a phone browser. And of course, it's desktop computer friendly too. But if you like apps and you want to have one-click access to all of our news, go to the App Store and download PW Torch and MMA Torch while you're at it. Some great coverage of UFC 199 leading up to the event, previews, fight predictions, breaking news, injury updates, all of that, plus editorials and analysis on all kinds of breaking news every single day by Jamie Pennick and company at MMA Torch and MMATorch.com. So check that out, and then live fight coverage on the night of UFC 199, followed by tons of post-event analysis. Definitely a go-to place for UFC and all MMA news. Let's go to a quick email alert. James Caldwell, James Caldwell from Houston, Texas, emailed and said, GLOW has been ordered for Netflix. Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. You're going to have to do a show on this, Jim. GLOW is going to be available on Netflix. That's kind of exciting news, although I kind of hated the show back in the day.
Oh, God, I couldn't stand it either. It was the worst show in the world. And you figure, you know, we were both, you know, I was a horny teenager back then. So it's like you'd think that my hormones would have overrun my wrestling sense. But no, I was outraged and offended by GLOW. If you've never seen GLOW, you should look. Look it up. It's the worst.
It was sports unentertainment. It was barely sports.
Yeah,
McClain. Oh, yeah, yeah. But it'll be fun too.
Well, and he's how many times has that dude he did Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling and Powerful Ladies of Wrestling and Women of Wrestling, and then there's another Women of Wrestling. I think he's doing right that he's tried to start up now. He's done this concept like for 30 years, and each time there's like a new Becky the Farmer's Daughter.
Yes.
There's been like seven of them, I think.
I love
but
too. Jim, yeah. Jim, I love too. The second incarnation was POW, P-O-W-W, and you know what it stood for? Powerful Women of Wrestling. So it should have been POW,
right.
Wow. So it's like Powerful right. of Women Wrestling. It's just, I mean, you do what you got to do, but...
Well, they just did a cruise. The Gorgeous Women of Wrestling had a carnival cruise or something like that, where you could go cruising with the original Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
But, oh wow!
No, I've been actually very actively trying to get the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling on. They were at Cauliflower Alley when I was there, and it's actually been a lot harder than I'd imagined. Who knew that they were so hard to get on the air, but they are.
Wow.
But no, I've been working on it for quite a while. Who I really want, who I'm dying to get on, is, the woman who did roller derby and wrestling and everything, Queen Kong,
yeah.
Matilda the Hun, that one lady, Dee Booher, who has just an amazing career and just low-level B movies and roller derby and all of that stuff. She's like the best, and I really want to get her on the air.
I do want to note, since Jason Paul was a staple of this show on Tuesdays for a long time, if you want to hear what Jason thought of last night's Raw, you just have to go to ProWrestling.net. He's got a free daily audio show, and he'll be doing some Raw analysis, I'm sure, and the Raw hit list also. I haven't checked to see what's up yet today, but I know he does free daily audio. So check out our friend Jason Powell over at ProWrestling.net if you miss his Raw analysis. It's not like you can't find it and can't hear it, and he'll be back on the show with me probably in a couple of weeks. So anyway, just want to update that. Let's go to our first email question, then we'll go back to phone lines. Patrick, related to our last conversation, Jim, on AJ Styles' turn, Patrick says, I didn't watch Raw last night, but I did see the AJ Cena segment, I assume online, and while I got really excited seeing AJ and Cena in the same ring, I couldn't shake this overwhelming sense of dread, even more so when AJ blinded him out of nowhere. My question is, after losing to Jericho at Mania, losing to Roman Reigns twice, has AJ already become the dreaded good hand? Jim, first of all, I thought the announcers and WWE in general did a stellar job, magnificent job of making AJ and Cena standing in the ring opposite of each other feel like I felt when I flew to Oakland, California back in the day to see the first advertised Hogan-Flair singles match at a house show of all things, and I saw Flair and Hogan stand in the ring together for the first time. It was amazing. It was like Hogan and Ultimate Warrior opposite of each other one-on-one for the first time. They did a great job making that feel like a moment. I applaud them for that. It was the right business move. For a lot of fans who don't know AJ really well, but will buy the narrative, they now have now think of AJ as a bigger deal than previously. My question to you, Jim, is do you think they've done harm? They might be trying to sell the audience on this, but have they done harm to AJ because of his big match singles record so far in WWE? Is it a little too late to sell AJ as this big of a deal opposite of Cena when he hasn't really definitively won a big singles match feud yet?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that they sort of have almost erased that from recent memory as far as, I mean, they made a huge deal out of AJ Styles in the ring or coming out and being in the same ring with John Cena. I mean, when you think about all of the big stars that have come through WWE in the last, let's just say, 35 years, there have been bigger stars than AJ Styles that have been made over or given a new name or their history isn't acknowledged or had to start over from square one. There have been, you know, the Road Warriors, you know, so many different people that have come in and have been treated like nothing. And if you would have told me, I mean, think about all of the garbage that AJ had to go through in TNA with his contract when he left, and he ended up going to New Japan and stuff. If you would have told me, you know, during that time that that this was going to be his road, not only into WWE, but using his real name, using his long established name, using his long established gear, basically just being himself, and they were going to talk about him, you know, I would have laughed in your face. And for them to acknowledge in this era a non Vince McMahon creation being at John Cena's level, and this was that big of a deal, it's staggering. It really is staggering when you can look at all of the people. I mean, when Ric Flair came in, what is that crappy world title? What is that? I don't know what that piece of tin is. Where did he get that thing from? I'll tell you that. You know, he's not the real world champion. I don't know where that guy came from. You know, you can just go back and look in history of all of that stuff. I mean, Ted DiBiase had to become the $1 million man. I mean, everybody that has come through the door has been repackaged, but no, not AJ Styles, which it's as big a deal as everyone made last night.
Let me grab another question here from the email bag. By the way, our email address, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Pat McNeil, by the way, my days are all thrown off on holiday weekends. Things just kind of come up so suddenly and quickly in terms of the normal weekly schedule. Pat McNeil's PW Torch Livecast is going to air now on Wednesdays, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. So that is the new time slot for Wednesdays. And just to be clear, this is a one-time, perhaps, but the plan is for it to be a one-time earlier start. The normal time slot for my shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Pacific time. So Wednesdays now, support Pat McNeil's show. Call in live. Converse with Pat and his guests, 5:30 Eastern going forward this summer. And then Fridays, of course, is Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant at 7 Eastern. And they're pretty consistent with that time slot, so that's easy to find. And, Jim, your show starts at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific?
Yes, I get up early for you people.
You people. No, you don't get to say that. That's Pat McNeil.
That's true.
We don't want a Pabst Blue Ribbon infringement. John Cena controversy here, Jim. You don't get to say you people.
Right. No, I don't. You're right.
All right.
Hey, by the way, Wade, I just got – there's a little news that just came across my Facebook feed – from Bertrani Bear. They're posting that it looks like Cody Rhodes has got his first match booked.
Yeah. What is
it? And his first opponent is a big one. It's going to be Kurt Angle.
Oh, wow. Where?
I know. It says here it's going to be August 27th with Northeast Wrestling. So Kurt Angle, and they're using the name Cody Rhodes on the flyer, it looks like. So that's,
cool. Well,
that's something.
I would hope that WWE does not own the name Rhodes. They certainly can't own Cody. So I'm happy about that. Okay, Jim, here's another question on AJ from Ted from Sacramento. Do you think they knew they were going to do the AJ heel turn all along, but waited 2 months so he could have the AJ matches against Roman where AJ was a face? They had to know if they did a heel turn by AJ attacking Roman, the fans would have cheered AJ and still booed Roman. And then in the two matches, despite AJ being a heel, he would have gotten cheered and Roman would have gotten booed, which would have made Roman look worse. So do you think the heel turn was delayed because they knew it wouldn't work against Roman? Thanks for your insights. Interesting question, Jim. I mean, I have not heard that. It could turn out to have been the case, or maybe tentatively so. I thought it was interesting that AJ was put against Roman as a babyface. But I thought, well, this is a good out. AJ can have a really good to great match with Roman a couple times. And that will... And if Roman gets booed coming out of WrestleMania, Vince McMahon can go, well, I had the balls to book a babyface against Roman Reigns. I'm not scared of Roman's crowd reaction. Roman can fend for himself. But in reality, it was building in an excuse for Roman to be booed, because, well, he's against a fellow babyface, so the fans had to choose. It's a way of almost making it a no-lose situation. But it's possible. I think Ted brings up a good question, that maybe originally they were going to have AJ turn heel sooner and be a heel against Roman. They just were embarrassed by the fact that AJ would have been cheered, so they decided to delay it. My thinking is, no, that AJ had to win over Vince McMahon to even get this consideration to be a top heel opponent for John Cena, and that what we saw last night with Styles turning on Cena was something that Vince wanted to do once AJ proved himself to him, that he is a top star, and he gave AJ a very prestigious spot, which is the first big angle with John Cena since John Cena's return. So I think this was booked sort of on the fly. That's my hunch on this situation. What does your instinct tell you, Jim?
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. My feeling is that they kept AJ babyface and had the ambiguity with the club just to create some drama and create a storyline there when he was fighting Roman Reigns. But no, I would be very surprised if the booking and the thought process went that far back, all the way from months ago to John Cena. I'd be very, very surprised about that.
Ted also has another question. He says, Stephanie and Shane have complete go-away heat with me. Every time I see them, I want to change the channel. Within that context, it seems so counterproductive for Stephanie to be belittling Charlotte and dressing her down. My question to the two of you is, wearing a WWE lens, why do they think it helps Charlotte for Stephanie to dress her down, or are they simply doing it to help Stephanie? Jim?
Well, I think he answered his own question. Let me just say that to steal it, since I'm going to steal other people's lines, that in the words of Bruce Mitchell, in some regards, I have submitted to the McMahon family, and I get it. I get that the job is to get Stephanie over, and that she's a priority. And as much as we all are not the hippest on that, I understand. So on a certain level, I've submitted to everything. But last night was some of the most obnoxious booking and acting that I think they've ever done. Shane's dancing was the worst. When you think about this. Remember when they made Jim Ross dance? 60-year-old Jim Ross with Bell's palsy. And Jim Ross is so smart that he pulled it off. And Shane McMahon, with all of whatever he's doing for his training, could not pull off the dancing because he doesn't have the charisma. Vince could have pulled it off. A million other people could have pulled that off. But Shane, it was terrible. And then for Stephanie to dress down Charlotte and then to tease everyone that she was going to dance, and their little smug comments to each other in that opening segment, that thing was just, it was just the worst. And some of it is excusable, but last night was I'm here on the West Coast, so when I read some of the Twitter comments ahead of time for Raw, I always kind of take it with a grain of salt, but everyone who tweeted that last night's opening segment was the worst, oh, you're 100% right. It was beyond the worst.
See, I have submitted too. I expect Shane and Stephanie to be just insufferably smug and self-indulgent, and they were last night. By the way, Shane's dancing normally when he does his thing in his tennis shoes, the gym shoes, the sneakers, whatever you want to call them. It looks like it's just a guy who got who's slipping on ice and trying to stay standing. Like, imagine somebody who isn't used to being on an ice rink, stepping onto an ice rink in slippery shoes. That's what his dancing looks like. It's looked like he's trying to not fall on his ass on ice. And New Day...
He's a cartoon running.
Yes, he is. It's just...
He's a cartoon who's trying to run.
But people...
In place.
But some people love him and think he's the coolest thing, so whatever. But yeah, the Stephanie Shane stuff, it's just like, I mean, you're right. I'm submitting to it. The thing that I liked about that opening segment, because there is a bright side to it, is... I was scared that they weren't going to address the roster split upcoming, that they were going to save it for some, quote, big announcement on Raw, as if the narrative, everybody on Raw had to play dumb to all the headlines in the media over the past week. And I'm glad that they addressed it. They said, hey, this stuff needs to be worked out. I thought the corporate speak was hilarious. I mean, the sentence that they used to describe the roster split was such corporate gibberish BS. It was hilarious. I had fun with it on the Keller Hotline last night. For VIP members in my Raw recap. I mean, it's astounding that somebody thinks that is actually the English language, but they're trying to beat around the bush. They don't want to own the fact that, hey, everybody, in 7 weeks, Raw's going to have half of the wrestlers that you're used to seeing not on the show anymore. And they can't say that. But they have to spin it as a positive that now, in order to see half of your favorites, you got to watch two nights, not just one. They can't own that. They can't say it outright, so they try to mask it with all this corporate speak. Because of the unique depth of the Michael Cole's quote was just the unique depth of the superstar roster chart. It was just like, oh God. But anyway, the bright side is they actually address some of the questions that people have. New Day, people love New Day. I think they're hit or miss, but they get great crowd reaction, sell a lot of merchandise. Vince loves them, and having them come out there and just in their own way kind of address some of the questions about the brand split, as almost every segment on Raw, as with almost every segment on Raw, it was 40-50% too long. But I thought that New Day addressing those topics was a positive. I think that you wanted to have, in some form or fashion, create some intrigue about, oh, our tag team's going to get broken up, which brand are we going to go on? Because one of the exciting things about the roster split, and Greg Parks, by the way, wrote a good long piece, feature column for this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, and we put it up as an early release article last night before Raw, runs down, you know, the good and the bad of the last roster split, putting that 9-year run in historical perspective, and looking at why it may or may not work any better now. One of the things with the roster split that was fun were the drafts. Most of the time, they were fun because it was going to change it's going to change potential matchups and dynamics with wrestlers who had been kept apart for a while. And I think that opening segment kind of gave us some of those feelings again, and then also kind of introduced some of the newer viewers to the idea that, oh yeah, this is going to get complicated. I mean, there's going to be some people who end up where they don't want to go or end up split up. So, I don't know. I thought that the segment served its purpose while also being self-indulgently boorish, as Stephanie and Shane often are. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got a lot of people on hold here on our... thank you, by the way, everybody, for tuning in early. It's great to see that people follow us on Twitter and on the website and keep track of when we're going to be on the air, even when we have to make a last-second time slot change. Let's go to Erico 305 next. 305, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. DJ from Miami.
Hey, DJ. What do you got for Jim and me?
I got two quick things, guys. My first thing is that what do you guys think what they're going to do with Titus O'Neil? Do you think they're going to push him, or do you think they're going to wait until... they're going to do some pink slips again. So I was talking to James last night, and he says maybe that he might get the belt, maybe. What do you guys think of that? Ask my person.
You said Titus O'Neil? Was that your question?
Yeah,
that's what I thought. And what's your second one? We'll just cover both.
And my second thing is that I'm so glad AJ went to heel, because I like him better like that. Like his TNA, I think he was a better heel. And I really don't want him and Cena going all the way to WrestleMania. I would really like for him and Brock Lesnar to go at it maybe around WrestleMania, and, you know, because I'd rather see Brock Lesnar compared to Bray Wyatt and AJ. You know what I mean? So what do you guys think of that?
Jim, you want to tackle either of those first?
Yeah. If you are waiting for Titus O'Neil to beat Rusev for the U.S. title, you are going to be waiting a very long time. That is not going to happen. Here's the thing. I think everyone likes the idea of a brand split right now because they want to see opportunity, and they want to see opportunity for their favorite. But not everybody on the roster is going to be your favorite. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to get opportunities. And that's what this brand split is also going to mean, that people that who may or may not be particularly interesting or compelling to you are going to get some TV time because they need to fill up some TV time. And that means that the Titus O'Neils of the world are going to be in angles and things. Now, Titus O'Neil is going to get killed by Rusev, and whoever the next real opponent is, as we go towards SummerSlam, will then manifest himself after we deal with Titus O'Neil. But Titus O'Neil is not going to be the United States champion. Titus O'Neil is going to be the next person to tap out to the accolade, probably on TV. Maybe the match on the pre-show, maybe for the next pay-per-view. But no, Titus O'Neil is not going to win a championship.
What you said. How about the Brock topic?
Yeah, I guess. Why not? Sure. I mean, anything. Yeah, we've seen so many matches now with Brock that, yeah, sure, why not? AJ's new. That why not? Sure, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we need to have, on the list of opponents for Brock Lesnar, if Brock's going to be a babyface, and it just seems like he's the special attraction babyface. He's not really a face, he's just Brock, but they're going to ideally match him against heels, because I think it undercuts a babyface to have Brock against a babyface and have that babyface get booed against Brock. Unless it's like this epic match with an established top guy like Roman Reigns or John Cena, and you know, we're going to see probably, I don't know if we'll see Cena-Lesnar again, maybe not, but we'll see Roman against Lesnar again, one way or the other. And because I think they believe that if Roman is tough against Brock and eventually beats Brock, that will help establish Roman's star power, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. But yeah, I'd like to see AJ against Brock. I'd like to see Samoa Joe against Brock. Those are two matchups with Brock that we haven't seen that I think would be good. And I think AJ has enough credibility. I think even with his size, people perceive him as really tough. And he gives off that vibe. And I think Vince McMahon, very impressed with what he did with Roman the last 2 months, probably has added AJ to his Roman Reigns opponent list. Okay, let's go to our end of the hour break here, or top near end of the first hour break. When we come back right after this, we will take more calls. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. Loot Crate is a sponsor of the PW Torch Livecast. We continue to get good feedback from people who have signed up for Loot Crate service. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items, which include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. Make sure to head over to lootcrate.com and enter coupon code PWTORCH to save $3 on any new subscription. That's lootcrate.com, coupon code PWTORCH to save $3. Loot Crate, it's like a friend who knows what you love and surprises you with an awesome present every month. They ship to 27 countries. You can find out the list of those countries. You're very likely in one of them, so no worries. If you're not in the United States or Canada or the UK, don't worry about it. They likely ship to your country. Loot Crate is more than a subscription service. It's an entire community of fans who share their experiences and interact with each other around the unboxing of each month's crate. Loot Crate guarantees $40+ in retail value in every crate, sometimes a lot more, and they charge half of that. So it's a great deal. Every month there's a different theme. All items are curated around that theme. Themes are inspired by major movie and video game releases, as well as pulling from pop culture franchises we all know and love, like Star Wars, Marvel, The Walking Dead, The Legend of Zelda, and many more. Check it out. It's lootcrate.com, coupon code PWTORCH. All right, we're back live on the PW Torch livecast, and we'll take more calls and tackle perhaps some more emails in our remaining minutes on today's program. And we'll begin with area code 813. 813, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Jay from Tampa.
Hey, Jay, what have you got for Jim and me today?
Hey, first of all, before I begin, I just want to take a second to put you guys over at the Torch, man. I'm a faithful VIP member. My only regret is that I hadn't discovered you guys sooner. But have one apology, Wade. I'm glad you mentioned it a few moments earlier. But, man, I felt so bad. I have, like, 5 Amazon orders in the last 2 weeks, and I totally neglected the Torch. But I promise you, I'll get on that. Like you said, it only takes one extra step.
You know, our revenue share was down a little bit this month from what it had been, and you are the reason, Jay. You would have gotten us back to our average for this year in May had you done that. So I know who to blame. That's by the way,
I'll get back on it.
pwtorch.com/Amazon. Click the link. You land at Amazon. You shop away. We get a cut. It's a great way to show support for us. Jay, I will forgive you. You're a long-time loyal call.
Good. And from here on out, I think what I'm going to do is just save it as a favorite so it automatically directs me.
Yep.
That's going to help me to remember.
That works. All right. Anyway, thanks. Appreciate that.
I only had the opportunity to watch the first hour of Raw last night as, you know, I was under duress with the family. Two other groups managed to outbeat Vince with the 3-hour Raw pretty much, and that was like, well, almost. And I watched the start of the series of Roots, and then of course the Warriors game. But nevertheless, I just had a question with the rub that they were trying to give Apollo Crews on the Big Show, which Big Show, in my opinion, looked like the biggest hypocrite when he mentioned about somebody else being a bully when he's just on and off again bully. But it just reminded me of what they tried to do between Mark Henry and Neville. So I don't know if they're going to continue to keep those seasoned guys off the television and just have them come in and do things like that. So that was my first question, is do you think that's something that is just going to try and give the rub, or is it where we unfortunately see another Big Show turn? And my other question seemed kind of petty, but with Bubba Ray Dudley, this guy looked so great for his age and time in the business in TNA as Bully Ray, getting in as fit as he did. Do you think WWE had anything to do with these love handles that Bubba has picked up as since coming back to WWE television, because they want him to be the fat guy in the Dudleys?
No, I don't think that. I mean, Bubba, I think when you are a certain weight for a lot of your life, and then you work really hard to lose weight, and Bubba did. Bully Ray looked amazing and talked about his calf muscles and all that. I didn't expect he would stay at that weight forever. I think sometimes, I mean, it's statistically the case. That a lot of times you end up kind of returning or straying back towards that old weight. I don't think in any way WWE encouraged it. I just think Bubba went back to some of the eating habits or whatever that he once had. I mean, there might be other things at play too in terms of things he did in order to get to that weight that he just doesn't want to do anymore. I don't know on that one. As far as Big Show goes, Jim, you want to tackle that one? Oh, I got to get Jim back on. Jim, sorry. Go ahead.
I think they just kind of use Big Show where they use Big Show now. I think they just kind of plug him in where they need him, whether he's going to be offering sage advice like he did last night, or if he needs to be the bully, or he needs to be the lovable, affable giant. I think, you know, and I think he talked about it. Was it on the Stone Cold podcast that he did that, you know, that's just his, when he did, yeah, it was a Stone Cold podcast on the network that, you know, that's just kind of his job now, that, you know, when they need him to be a heel, he's a heel. When they need him to be a face, he's a face. Whenever, you know, they just kind of plug him in where they need him. He's the veteran presence now, and he's at a different stage in his career. As far as what role he's going to play with Apollo Crews. You know, I don't know, to be honest. I kind of have mixed feelings right now on Apollo Crews. I mean, last week, I don't think with his match with Jericho, I don't know that that did him any favors. We'll have to see what happens with Sheamus. And while he looks like a $1 million standing there, it seems like he's lost some charisma on the main Raw stage. I'm not writing him off yet, but he's just sort of in a transitional time. We'll see if he can sink or swim, and I'm willing to give him the time to do it. I think there's certainly potential there. Not time to write him off, but he's had some missteps.
If you're just joining us because you expected the show to have started at 1 Eastern, we actually started an hour earlier than our standard time slot, even though we haven't been sticking to that since our post-WrestleMania time slot changes. But we welcome you to give us a call. There's a lot of topics we haven't touched on yet. We'll be on the air for a few more minutes here. So jump on the phone lines if you're just tuning in now at our quote normal start time at 1 Eastern. 646-721-9828 is the number for that. Jim, let's do another email question here. This comes from Tony B. First off, Wade, you've given the indication that WWE will be going to two world champions coming out of July's roster split. If that's the case, then do they bring back the big gold belt? To me, it seems silly to keep retiring the big gold belt and then bringing it back whenever they feel like it. However, I do believe it's an iconic image, from Ric Flair slinging the belt over his shoulder after bloody title defense, to the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers co-opting it for their Super Bowl victory celebration. The big gold belt just oozes prestige and significance. Secondly, what do they call the new belt? With the rechristening of the main champion as the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, it seems redundant to call the new belt the World Heavyweight Championship again. Will they call it the Raw Championship and the SmackDown World Championship? To me, that makes more sense and gives each brand its own identity. I'm eager to hear your thoughts today. Thanks for taking my questions. I appreciate everything you both do. Jim, I think it was Bruce and Travis on Friday who talked about this. I think I listened to a lot of wrestling podcasts, but I think they brought that up of, you know, what do we call both belts? And I don't really, I think Raw and SmackDown are such iconic names of TV shows that you can actually have a WWE Raw World Champion and a WWE SmackDown World Champion and get away with it. I mean, I don't think there's a perfect solution. I think going back to WWE Champion and World Champion can work too. I don't think it's a make or break decision on their part, but the aesthetics of what you call a title and what it looks like matter to a degree that it deserves some thought. Your thought on what they call it, and yeah, do they bring back that big gold belt that goes away and comes back?
I think that they maybe just go back to the WWE Championship and the WWE World Championship again. That's my thought, but again, I don't know. Who knows what they're going to do there. My thought on the big gold belt, and again, this is just a thought from what we've seen now. You know, there was a time when the championships, the titles, not belts, but the titles, you know, they had winged eagles on them, or they had the big gold belt, or they were spinner belts or whatever, that they had a certain look to them. And now, the design for the championships are more about the logo, because during the World Series, or again, yeah, during a football title run or whatever, we've seen, different teams at different times co-opt that belt and wear it in the locker room during celebrations. We've seen the tradition now of WWE sending replica belts to MVPs and to winning teams and things like that. And that's a marketing opportunity now. You know, so we've gone from seeing eagles and other decorations on belts to now it's just a big logo. And we've seen that now with the new women's championship. So I have no reason to think that trend is not going to continue. So right now at this point in time, if I were to put my money, I'm going to guess that the big gold belt is going to be retired in its current form because it doesn't have a big enough logo on it. If there's a way to stick a big WWE logo right in the middle of the big gold belt, that's the only way it's coming back, but it's not coming back in its current form. I think there's zero chance of it.
How about a Pabst Blue Ribbon World Championship belt with a big Pabst logo?
Oh, jeez.
It's, I mean, why not? You know, you can have the front nameplate, you know, that has, you know, WWE Raw World Champion or whatever. But on the side plates, you know, like the Pabst Blue Ribbon logo, sponsored by this World Champion. I mean, the NBA is going to have uniform advertising on it soon. I mean, why not just sell space, this space for rent on the belt?
I guess that's the one thing Vince hasn't done is sell the arena around Raw or sell the mat or anything like that. I guess you got to give him credit for that. Hey, Wade, but before we go, we do have to talk about one of your favorite topics that you've talked about for decades now. What about the TV commercial last night for the new WWE 2K17 video game and Goldberg coming out of the hatch?
Mm-hmm.
Does Vince make it like he did with Sting, like he did with Ultimate Warrior, like he did with Brock a couple of years ago after they were in the video game? Do you think Goldberg's coming back at some point to WWE?
I am leaning yes based on this, but I don't think that it's definitive. I think it's possible that he could be in the video game and not actually wrestle, but he is interested in wrestling in front of his kids. He will be 50 years old next WrestleMania. That is 5 or so years younger than Sting when he made his comeback to WWE. I think that I've always leaned towards it being likely that Goldberg comes back. And I think that there's money in it. I think there's nostalgia for the Attitude Era. I think people who didn't live through the Attitude Era can relive Goldberg's winning streak and would be curious to see what he does. I think... you know, obviously Goldberg Ryback is not going to likely happen. I don't think WWE is going to invest in give Ryback an opponent of that stature, given Ryback's current standing with WWE and his public statements about how pay works in WWE. But Goldberg against Lesnar is an easy match to have. But you can also do Goldberg against, you know, a Rusev, for instance. Build up Rusev strong. Have Goldberg come in and just have people, you know, just give it. It's not a main event match with high expectations. It's, I want to see the spear and the jackhammer, and they feed somebody like Rusev, who they feel they can afford to feed to him in that spot. And that could happen as soon as WrestleMania, or as soon as SummerSlam, or maybe delayed to WrestleMania. So I think if you cornered me and said, what are they going to do with Goldberg? I'd say, yes, they bring him back. It's going to be SummerSlam or Mania, and they'll build up Rusev for a jackhammer and a spear in a fourth from the top, fifth from the top match. That's kind of a feel-good nostalgia match.
Interesting. Yeah, that could happen. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll take that, Jim. Thanks. All right. We're going to wrap up here in just a moment. We'll take at least one more call here and one or two more emails before we wrap up in about 5 minutes here. So let's go to 773. 773, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, Boris from Chicago.
Hey, Boris. What have you got for us? Good to hear from you.
I don't know if we talked about it or not, but the Real Ospreay and Ricochet match.
I knew it. I knew you were going to ask that. I don't know why. I just knew it. Yeah, go ahead.
My thing, this is Super Juniors, right? Isn't this the place where they get to showcase their style versus, you know, a regular match or Asylum match or something like that? And I just don't understand how, you know, we at the place where, okay, I understand you can't do that every night, but if it's a, you know, Super Junior thing, and the, you know, what's the problem? And with WWE coming up, they Super Cruiser thing, I'm sure they're going to try to emulate something from that. Your take on that.
Thanks, Boris. No, I'm glad you brought that up. We had some emailers bring it up, too. Jim, have you had a chance to see either the highlights or the whole match? I have to disclose, I haven't seen the whole match yet. I've absolutely seen the highlights. A holiday weekend, I've just been busy with family stuff. But I do want to see the whole match, and I've kind of been waiting to comment on it until I do, although I'll give a qualified comment on it at this point. But, Jim, what exposure have you had to this match that's been a topic all weekend?
Yeah, you know, here's what I think, particularly about Vader saying something. The guy that was in the WCW mini-movie on the beach blowing up a boat with Sting and Davey Boy Smith has no moral high ground to say that that match is ruining the believability of wrestling. That's what I think.
Well, I will say this.
Remember that movie? I do. Remember that mini movie? Oh. How terrible that was? Yeah. Jim, Vader needs to shut up.
I try to block it. Here's. I will disagree with you on this. I don't think being a wrestler on guaranteed salary, being ordered to do something, indicates that you're in favor of it. And in fact, there's a lot of things wrestlers are involved in that they speak out against later. So I'm not, if Vader was Booker and he was proud of it and he's touted, hey, I did these great mini movies, I'd say, yeah, no moral high ground. I don't think we should say Vader's opinions on what's best for wrestling should be disqualified because he was forced to be in one of the worst things in wrestling history back then. So I'll give him a little more room than that, actually a lot more room than that, than you're giving him in terms of being upset by this. Now, that said, the highlights that are airing, I think, is amazing to watch. I think that the conversation that has started is a good one, and I think the conversation that Vader's helped amplify is a good one, which is how much choreography is good or bad. I showed the clip to a non-wrestling fan, and I was curious, you know, what do you think of this? And his reaction was, well, that's great, but that wasn't a fight. That's choreographed dance. That's basically a choreographed dance routine. If that was actually supposed to be two people fighting, I think that's ridiculous. And my response, there was a discussion going on with Alex Greenfield and I think Court Bauer, some ex-creative team members. I think Andrew Goldstein, too. They were talking about this on Twitter, and my response to them was, I look at what they did as a bit like I look at the NBA All-Star game, where they don't play defense, and players get to show off their athleticism as kind of a showcase. And I think that that clip of that match was the clips that I've seen of the match indicate to me that that was a moment when you can suspend your disbelief and say Ricochet and Will Ospreay just decided that we're gonna show off a little bit. We're not gonna fight. We're gonna show off a little bit. Try to one up each other. Yes, with dance moves. We're gonna show off what we can do athletically. And respond in kind. I know to the average non-fan, it looks choreographed. To Vader from the UWFI, it looks choreographed. But there's something, I mean, I've seen enough Lucha Libre to where, yes, it looks choreographed, but I also have this narrative suspension of disbelief that wrestlers get a feel for each other. They get a feel for what they do. I grew up watching the swing into the ropes, the drop down, the leapfrog. That's been part of wrestling, even outside of Lucha Libre or Japan cruiserweight wrestling, junior heavyweight wrestling. The idea of swinging your opponent into the ropes, dropping down, they leap over you, you stand up, you leapfrog, they duck under you. That stuff's been going on. This is just an escalated, amplified, more athletic version of that. I don't have a big problem with it as long as then they get down to fighting. Or to me, it's sort of like a point guard dribbling between his legs when coming up the court. There's no point to it. It's just showing off a little bit. It doesn't help him score a basket or get an assist. But it's something he does because it's just he can and it's fancy and he wants to show off a little bit and get in a rhythm. I think if a certain segment of the fan base likes it and it helps those two stand out, I don't have a problem with it as long as ultimately, this is why I want to see it in the context of the whole match. As long as in the context of the whole match, they end up getting serious and having a fight that looks real and looks like they're trying to win and not just show off. So that's my kind of preliminary stance on the totality of it and really a firm stance on the broader context of that style. I think that when it's a rare breed of wrestler who's capable of doing what they did, choreographed looking or not. And as long as it's in the right context, I think it can bring new people into the sport. Jim, any reaction to that?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on. I was kind of being facetious about the whole Vader thing. But I mean, you know, here's the thing is, you know, Vader was a super heavyweight. And wrestlers tend to favor whatever style they were good at.
Right. Oh, good point.
You know, that's what people like. You know, Stan Hansen likes strong style. You know, Rey Mysterio likes Rey Mysterio style. I mean, that's what people always favor. Or, you know, a guy like Stone Cold or The Rock are going to favor guys who can talk and get away with doing less. It's all whatever your strengths are is what you favor. You know, as far as the choreography, in the context of the match, what they were saying, the psychology is that they knew each other and that they were anticipating what each other was doing,
right.
And because they knew each other so well. So in that regard, it was completely fine. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, back in the Monday Night Wars, how much I loved watching Dean Malenko matches. And I remember I think it comes up on one of my Total Chaos shows, wrestler Bart Sawyer was saying, you know, well, Dean Malenko doesn't show any emotion. He just goes through the moves like a robot, and that's not wrestling because you need to emote and earn that sympathy and things. And that's a valid criticism of Dean Malenko. That's a very valid criticism. So I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. I think that all wrestlers go through the phase where they quote unquote do too much, and then either time or knowledge teaches them that they need to slow down or, you know, save their body. I mean, we saw it with Daniel Bryan, that maybe he did too much during his indie career, which cost him some paydays later in life. You know, it's all gonna work itself.
Yes. All right. We have an email question about Raw last night, and I want to deliver a little bit of ratings news, not Raw ratings news, but NBA ratings news. The Game 7 last night, Golden State Warriors against Oklahoma City Thunder, did an 11.2 rating for TNT. 11.2. WWE typically these days is in the low twos. By the way, WWE usually does better ratings than the regular NBA games on TNT, and has for years. This was the highest rated broadcast on cable television for the NBA ever. It peaked with a 13.8 rating from 11:15 to 11:30 after all the Raw viewers tuned out and checked out the last few minutes of the game. In fact, the rating went up from the average, about the equivalent of Raw's audience. So I'm sure that was some of them. I was one of those. You know, I watched Raw live, was keeping track of the score online, and as soon as Raw ended, flipped over to watch the end of the game. 30% of the homes in the Bay Area and Oklahoma City, a 30 share, 30% of people watching TV were watching that game, which is almost unheard of in today, even with sports. The post game inside the NBA post game show did a 4.8, which is more than double what Raw's been doing ever. It was the highest rating for the show ever. It was the game itself and the post game were the top two rated programs of the night across both cable and broadcast TV. This is a report on CNN somebody sent me a link to. That relates to the question that came in from Jerry, a VIP member. He says, why didn't they just run a best of show last night? If I were in the audience, I would have wanted a refund for all the recaps, video packages, and quick matches. Jim, I mean, they're not going to run a best of show. I get what Jerry's saying. I didn't think the recaps and video packages were any worse than normal last night, pacing-wise. WWE last night, though, I didn't sense that they changed anything. That even if there was no Game 7 tonight, last night, I think the same show would have aired. I didn't sense that they were counter-programming. I think they're just doing their thing. They're trying not to micro-analyze and tweak the format based on competition. They just kind of do what they do and plow through. Did you sense they did anything special last night based on Game 7 being opposite of them?
Well, it wasn't just Game 7. It's also people coming back from Memorial Day weekend, too. And these shows are always kind of placeholder shows. I mean, the fact that we got an AJ Styles and Cena angle, I thought was pretty impressive. As far as any counter-programming, the only thing that I thought was odd was I expected Cena to come out during the 9 o'clock hour, and when he came out at the 10 o'clock hour, that was the only thing that I was kind of surprised about. But I guess that's just, you know, Roman Reigns is the guy, so you got to put him at 9 now.
Yeah. We'll wrap up with the final email question or two here. Anthony in the UK says, do you think the Seth Roman Raw segment was flat because a feud needs a role reversal? The universe wants to support Seth, WWE, or even supporting Seth with a network special on his recovery. Surely the audience feels conflicted. We didn't talk about this at all yet, Jim, so I wanted to sneak this question in to get us to talk about it. The Seth Roman segment, I think everything on Raw in the three-hour era feels like it's 30 to 40% bloated. Everything is just goes too long. I mean, there's some good matches that I'm glad go long, like the six-man tag match last night was fun to watch, and was a good match with a good mix of personalities. But these other segments, the non-wrestling segments especially, go too long. And I get the point was for Seth to be obnoxious and just, you know, exasperatingly annoying. And I get that. But it did sort of feel like they were trying everybody's patience. And yes, I think Roman Reigns can't be the type of heel Seth is. So if the roles were reversed, Roman would have to be a completely different heel than Seth. Seth is so good at this very specific heel role. And Roman as a heel would be totally different. But I think Roman, by the way, as a heel, would have a lot more to say on the microphone. I think he'd be phenomenal. Somebody had a longtime correspondent for The Torch emailed and said that that he was among those at a house show this weekend in Peoria the definition of Middle America, the go-to cliched Middle America, and Roman is getting booed. And Roman gave that fan a finger. It was kind of subtle by his side, but he gave him a finger for booing him. Roman has a lot of pent-up resentment of the fact that pro wrestling fans don't grace his royal presence with cheers. But Roman is not somebody anybody should feel bad for. He's not owed cheers. He hasn't been anointed by some higher power the grand right, unalienable right, to be cheered and beloved as a multimillionaire centerpiece of WWE. That's not how pro wrestling works. You don't automatically get to be cheered if Vince McMahon decides he wants you to be the top star. So yes, I think there is resentment and resistance to Roman Reigns that Vince McMahon and Roman Reigns himself can't understand. Roman would be a better heel than a babyface in and of itself. I think Roman is, his personality, his demeanor is much more built to be a heel. That said, I thought Seth did, it was too long, but he did a nice job being heelish last night, Jim. The segment went too long, but it served the purpose of annoying people, and I think it actually helped Roman be liked because Seth was so aggravating. Your take on that segment?
I wouldn't go as far as say that he was liked, but I do think that that was meant for Seth to be a heel and for fans to be annoyed with Seth Rollins. No question about that. I agree 100%. As far as I know, a lot of fans are down on Roman Reigns. A lot of Torch readers are down on Roman Reigns. And I'm not saying that I support Roman Reigns, but you know, there are more indicators to a wrestler's popularity than just their reaction on TV. You know, now that we've seen 10 years of John Cena and 10 years of people wanting him to turn and John Cena not being turned, you know, and you've talked about this, you know, there's merchandise numbers, there's house show numbers. And for me, what's more of an indication of Roman Reigns not succeeding where John Cena did succeed on a very weird level is, you know, we've seen Caldwell post some of this stuff, is that the house show numbers that Roman Reigns is headlining are not as strong as when John Cena was in that position. And I think, to me, that's more of an indication. And I don't know if we're going to get to see with any announcements coming up about, you know, merchandise numbers or things like that, but there's more than just getting booed, and I don't see that as a real indication of anything. But the house show numbers, I think I do see that as an indication, that could be something. And yeah, and Reigns is not handling things as well as John Cena did. And considering that there is precedence and Vince McMahon, you know, held pat with John Cena for a decade, there's no reason to think that he won't hold pat with Roman Reigns for the long term. You know, Roman should be more comfortable and take everything with the same aplomb that John Cena did. And the fact that he's not is also not a good indicator.
It's not it's not. Okay, yeah, let me get this last email question before we wrap up here. This is Moore M says, I may be the only person ready for New Day to disband. There are no black wrestlers in WWE's Money in the Bank this year. The two most memorable wrestlers, I think, as standouts in the Money in the Bank are Kofi and Shelton, but they never reached the brass briefcase. WWE needs to push Apollo or Titus to main event status for the black demographic to connect better. Two, would it be a good idea for NXT to bring in a few wrestling legends to tour with the brand as managers? Are they holding on to Joe in NXT to feud with Hideo Itami when he returns? Jim, WWE doesn't have a great history in terms of finding, cultivating, pushing, and even understanding how to push top black wrestlers. The Rock was obviously in that category, with a caveat of the Samoan heritage also being part of the mix, and Rock just being Rock and you know, being larger than anything race-oriented. I mean, he's a freaking Rock. He was just amazing. The New Day breaking up, I don't think is going to happen or should happen. I think there's some diminishing returns if they break up. I think the dynamic that they have, they should stick together. I don't love every segment they're in, but I don't think you break them up. I think you find a bet. And Titus O'Neil is too old and I think too limited in the ring to be anything more than fodder for Rusev as they're trying to rebuild Rusev. Apollo Crews, I think there's still hope for. I'm not quite sure what direction he goes in, but WWE, you know, should have a better track record, and hopefully they can build on it going forward, of black athletes. I mean, you think about that NBA rating last night. 11-point-something last night. And, hey, it doesn't get talked about on NBA games, nor should it, but mostly black athletes in those games. And it is those black athletes, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, they're the ones who are drawing the ratings. There's absolutely no bias that would prevent WWE from making a lot of money if they did a better job of finding, scouting, cultivating, and pushing and presenting in the right framework outside of some racist gimmick black athletes. Jim, they just don't get a passing grade for this historically.
No, I mean, they tried it with, I guess, the last person that comes to mind is Bobby Lashley. They tried to recruit Bob Sapp before they went with Bobby Lashley in that position. That's the last one that comes to mind just off the top of my head. Here's the thing is I agree with you that they do need someone, an African-American in a prominent position. I mean, they do have New Day and that's something, but I mean, they haven't given New Day anything serious to do. And last night I was like, oh man, am I over New Day? Is the expiration date hitting on New Day? Cause last night's segment was terrible. And Stephanie and Shane were equally as responsible with that. And so were the writers. It was just a fail all around.
Yeah. It was a fail all around.
I would say this, I'm against, you know, regardless of what color you are, either you have it or you don't. I don't think Titus has it. And I think the jury is still out. Apollo Crews is still very young in his career. And we've seen what has happened to WWE superstars who have been pushed too quickly when they're not ready. And there's no reason to think that wouldn't happen to him if he was pushed right now. I think he's got some jitters that he needs to get over. He needs to stay on the stage and be given some time to mature if he's certainly going to do anything. Moose is out there. Moose comes to mind as someone who has some potential that we shall see, but I'm not a big fan. I mean, I agree that they do need to do something, but I don't know that they have the right person to be a top person. I know that Court Bauer is talked about, and I don't know, he's got a different eye for talent, and maybe he could be right, but he's always pitched that he thinks Big E has potential to be a single star and even a potential WWE champion, that he's shown some versatility, he's shown some confidence, and I maybe I haven't seen quite what Court Bauer has seen, but I'm certainly not against that idea that maybe it's time to not break up New Day, but maybe it's time for New Day to pivot and either Kofi or Big E becomes the single star and New Day then becomes the Freebirds in the UWF, where you have Terry Gordy as the champion and then the other two guys are protecting the title for the group as a whole. I'd like to see something like that with New Day, where they can still be fun and still be sports entertainy, but at the same time, you still got to have that serious streak, because being serious, that's where the money is, and that's what New Day hasn't shown us yet, and that's what New Day needs to do. Is someone needs to make them mad and, you know, watch them lay the hammer down. That's what needs to happen next.
Brian Alston, Phoenix, Arizona, 25-year PW Torch VIP member, has a comment we'll end the show with here. While overall I like the intense beatdown that AJ Styles, Gallows, and Anderson gave to John Cena, I didn't like that no other wrestlers came out to help Cena. It also hurt that in the next segment or match, Becky Lynch did run out to help Natalya, who was being double-teamed by Charlotte and Dana Brooke. So Natalya has a friend, but Cena doesn't. This has happened to Cena for years. He gets attacked, no one helps. How should WWE cover this gap in logic? Also, the Goldberg WWE 2K17 commercial was great. Over the past 3 years, commercials with Ultimate Warrior, Sting, and Steve Austin have all been excellent. I will note Steve Austin did not come back and wrestle after being in that commercial. But another possible match, Jim, would be Goldberg-Undertaker. That's a legendary a match between two legends who there might be some nostalgia for. And I mean, I don't see Undertaker. Well, I don't know. I could see Undertaker, I guess, taking a spear and a jackhammer, not losing, kicking out, and then winning. I think if Goldberg comes back, you want him to be a babyface against a heel, and you want him to win. So I like that match better, but I just wanted to throw out there, if you're thinking, if Undertaker wrestles again, and you want just kind of that iconic matchup that's kind of larger, so to speak, than a babyface heel matchup, I guess you could put Goldberg on that radar. Anything to say about either that topic or John Cena having no friends? I agree. I'd like to see at least an attempt by a couple tag teams, or, you know, Zack Ryder, somebody to run out and Anderson and Gallows just beat him down, or scare them off with, you know, by holding up chairs and they kind of stop in their tracks or something. It does look bad and it's inconsistent.
Yeah, you know, since John Cena is now becoming the grand old man, and he talked about that last night on Raw, you know, it'd be nice to see if he had someone that he could mentor. That would be a good role for John Cena to have, an on-camera protege. That might be something for John to have as time goes on, and sort of build somebody up the way Dusty had Magnum TA, or I don't know, something like that. As far as Goldberg and The Undertaker, it's interesting because both of them like mixed martial arts, and I'd be curious to see with Goldberg's time away and maybe some time away to think and reflect that maybe he would add some new wrinkles to his in-ring style, and maybe we could see something cool from Undertaker and Goldberg. Or maybe they're just two old guys that are going to have a quick match. I don't know.
Jim, thank you. Always a pleasure to have you on the live cast on Tuesdays.
Always great to be here. Don't forget Saturday Morning Wrestling, Saturday mornings, 8:30 on the West Coast, 11:30 on the East Coast. We're going to have Steve Beverly at PW Torch Livecast. Love the old school calls when people come call in or tweet me at Jim Valley. It's always a lot of fun.
You can find the show live at pwtorchlivecast.com. It's easy to remember. It's the name of this show. .com. PWTorchLivecast.com. Check it out. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to everybody. Tomorrow, Pat McNeil. I'll be back on Thursday with Interview Thursday. But if you're looking for more Raw analysis, check out the James Caldwell hosted at Post Raw Show last night. That should be up next on the livecast feed here. And if you want to hear some cool interviews, Kevin Nash, Jim Ross, creative team member Kevin Eck from 2011 to 2014 with some great CM Punk insights, by the way, among others. And Alex Greenfield with some fascinating stories on Stephanie and Shane and Vince McMahon, some strong points of view on each of them, including a great story on what Vince McMahon would have done in his mind if not for being a pro wrestling promoter. And I've never heard this answer before, and I kind of think he might be onto what Vince would have done instead, and he's got reason to believe it. That was the Alex Greenfield interview. If you want to hear the complete interviews, you got to go VIP, and we'll tell you now how you can go VIP. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And until next time, on behalf of Jim Valley, this is Wade Keller, at The Wade Keller on Twitter, at PW Torch, signing off for today. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
Love.